Task Force on the Capital Construction Budget Process to order for Monday, August 11th. Welcome all the way here. I'll turn it over to Erin to tell us what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Today we have before you several, all discussion of ideas and options as to the direction and ongoing efforts of this task force. This is only our second meeting. And we do have a report due in October, but I think the best way to start would be to maybe talk about the work plan and our timeline, and then maybe work backwards through some of these topics and ideas for different ways of considering the capital construction process, its needs and priorities, and how best to prioritize our work from here on out. At our last meeting, we had a work plan that kind of laid out, based on the charge of the task force, the process for completing our work. I think with our October 15th reporting deadline, but yet we do not actually cease our work until the start of the next session. I'm hoping that we'll be able to get in at least a couple additional meetings, which is why today we just have under our work and our charge discussion of and possible ideas for long-range process for determining and implementing future capital construction needs, and also discussion of and ideas of ways of developing budget requests as it relates to the overall state budget priorities. I think I will turn it over to the co-chairs and the members as to how best you want to look at our work plan and timeline, and maybe discuss the possibility of continuing our work and extending the task force into future legislative sessions and or interims.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Senator, please.
If I could have the floor for a few minutes.
Go for it.
When these two task forces were created, it was envisioned that they would both be meeting soon after the long session ended. At first, we decided to delay this task force for a few months till we could get the task force on the budget process, basically the statutory review task force, up and running. As time went on, though, that task force became very problematic. And it's just recently, in our last couple of meetings of that task force, that we've actually gotten down to the point where it looks very clearly that we're going to be accomplishing our task. Probably in the next couple of meetings, we will be complete and we'll have a report and recommended legislation. I doubt very seriously if this task force can get to a point that it's going to be able to do that, obviously by the deadline of the report, which is now going to be a preliminary report. And I also think that even given the number of meetings we might have, we may be able to do some things before the session starts. But I do think it's going to be very hard. Again, the purpose of this wasn't really to decide how we're going to spend capital assets. The purpose was to discuss what kind of process we're going to have, what kind of needs we have in terms of information. Now, I've just jotted down some notes today while we've been in other meetings, and let me give you an idea of why I think this is so problematic. These are the possible requests that I'm aware of in the next biennium. I believe the executive branch will have between 100 and 200 million in executive branch requests that are outside of the replacement of, or the renovation and seismic upgrade of the state capitol. The state capitol has been given a range between 265 and $300 million. There is a task force out there to look at school facilities needs, and there's a lot of discussion going on in this building now about seismic retrofits to schools. That would be, under current discussions, that would be an entirely new assumption of responsibilities by the state that hasn't been done before, that could be into $200 or $300 million range. One of our traditional responsibilities has been to the universities, a university system, now to 7 separate universities. It looks like their requests are going to come in somewhere between $250 and $350 million. $90 million of that will be that we barely funded any of the major deferred maintenance in the current biennium, and so there'll be a major request there. We told community colleges that if we did the $112 million in this biennium, that they shouldn't be coming back and expecting any more in the 15-17 biennium, except for the one community college that didn't get a project and didn't request one. Now there are rumors that they're preparing another package, so I put that between the one project, which might be $8 to $10 million, and a whole new series of projects of probably in the neighborhood of $100 million. The state treasurer is going to have his proposal on the ballot, which is the authorization portion of this endowment fund for student assistance. To make that work, I think the state treasurer is going to come in and ask for somewhere between $100 and $200 million in GO bonding authority. We opened the door slightly to courthouses. I just recently had a discussion with the Chief Justice. They have 4 proposals they are bringing in for the coming session. One, obviously, the continuation of that little courthouse in downtown Portland. The other, I think, some sort of study of the Lane County Courthouse. And then 2 other projects which are unidentified. I put that between $100 and $150 million and as a new assumption of responsibilities. We'll be back again for Connect Oregon. Those usually range between $50 and $100 million. We all know that there are going to be a few little projects that end up here and there in this process, and I put those at $25 to $50 million. That means at a minimum, if we were to do everything and do it on the lower side, we'd be at $1.1 billion to $1.75 billion. Our GO bonding capacity prudently would be $750, but I think the treasurer is telling people $850. Lottery is probably $200. But I think they're telling them a higher number, probably in the neighborhood of 250. There are literally 100 questions, and if I can have 2 minutes, I'll just list a few of them. What are the capital assets of the state? Do we know? I don't think we actually do. Who is responsible for managing and maintaining these assets? I don't think that has been clearly defined. What capital obligations and liability has the state assumed? Probably another good question. How should the state evaluate the assumption of new or expansion of existing obligations? What GO and lottery bonding authority does the state have over the next 10 years? I think the treasurer would tell us about $3.5 billion over 10 years in GO and $1 billion in lottery. What capital needs will the state need to address in the next 10 years? New facility, renovation of facilities, and major deferred maintenance. How should the executive and legislative branches determine capital priorities? What funding sources are available to fund existing obligations and liabilities? Are those funding sources adequate? If we assume new obligations or liabilities, what sources of revenue will need to be dedicated to those new obligations and liabilities? Do we have sufficient resources to assume these obligations or liabilities? What impact will the assumption of new obligations and liabilities have on our ability to meet existing obligations and liabilities? Only a few left. Should we assume local obligations where the local entity has authority to fund the obligation but has been unable or unwilling to use locally generated resources? What is the long-term impact of assuming these responsibilities? How do we determine the value of capital assets? How do we prioritize preservation of capital assets? Clearly, some capital assets are more critical to the missions of the states. How do we determine and rank critical assets? How will the need for capital assets potentially change with changes in workforce requirements and in education? So that's just a few. So if we could do all that, and that's just what I thought of in about an hour.
Just two quick points of feedback, then I'll go to the center. One, could you send that list of questions to Erin so she doesn't have to try to write them down in her notebook? Because of those. And two, could you write out your answers to each one of those questions and have them for us by our next Senator.
Yeah, the list that I wrote down about what you said that we need for capital, there's a lot of questions within that list.
Right.
Yeah.
First of all, the capital improvements, that might have a constitutional problem in the Senate. Number two is if we're going to do school facility upgrades, that's taking on a whole nother bailiwick of capital that we might not have. And again, that goes back to the individual boards and the ability of them to raise taxes. Deferred maintenance, I've never been a fan of doing that within the university. I believe that that's something the university itself should do. Capital, to me, is doing new projects so that we get a new dorm or a classroom or whatever. And then the courthouses, that always has been a sticking point within capital construction. And there was an agreement that they were to take care of their own courthouses. Now, we broke that with Portland. I think before we give out any more money, we should readdress that if we want to go down that road, because that is a very expensive road. And again, that's a different division. That's the county. It's not the state. I'm not sure the state should be paying for it. That's my own personal opinion. Yeah. So if we weeded out just a little bit of that, we're down to the $750 or $800 million level. I think this list is a pretty big wish list, and the treasurer's pie in the sky too is another $100 to $200 million. I'm all for funding college education, but I'm not sure that we want to do it through capital construction. I really think that needs to be something that's prioritized through the general fund expenditures. So again, this list, I'd have problems with the list, let me put it that way.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Girod, these are just the ones that have been brought to my attention so far, and I'm sure there are more out there.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, you are. I tell you, being on this committee, you're everybody's best friend.
Yeah.
Senator Girod, do you have any other feedback to Senator Devlin's the list of questions he was posing? A fairly comprehensive list.
Oh, I like the questions. I think they're all questions that need to be asked, and maybe we need a more prudent sense of direction within the committee. Again, the level of government, I really feel like the state needs to be prudent with state dollars. That's just me. And so as much as I like the counties, paying for county courthouses, we knew that when we went into Portland, and some of us argued against that, that was going to open up a barn door of expenditures, and maybe we should cut our losses there. Going in, and by God, I think if we're going to spend money on preparedness for earthquakes, school facilities over on the coast are paramount. But I don't think that should come out of capital construction. That's just, I think that should come out of general fund revenue. The capital, my party, I think, is going to have a hard time ponying up too many votes for the capital improvement. I think it's a really good, I think it's something that needs to be done, but the price tag at $300 million, if I'm going to spend money on it, I look at it as an opportunity cost. How am I going to save lives during a major earthquake? There's going to be massive loss of life, massive loss and destruction throughout, wherever the zipper comes unzip. So if I was to spend money early, it would be to make sure that kids have a fighting chance and over on the coast. I mean, that's just me. So I would prioritize the schools first, but I do think that needs to come out of general fund so we don't set a priority that we're paying for improvements or new schools. That just, once we start down that slope, it gets pretty slippery as well.
By coming out of the general fund, do you mean that it would come as a, see, here's two of the things. One is,
It doesn't come through capital construction. It's not. If you want.
Oh, you meant a direct appropriation.
A direct appropriation.
Nothing that's bonded. Just how much you could afford to do in any biennium.
Yeah, pretty much.
So.
Because don't get me wrong. I think that's money. If we're going to look at preparedness for earthquakes, then I really honestly believe you need to. You're going to have, most of the bridges are going to be gone over on the coast. You're going to stage over in Redmond. So between the staging and getting food and water to people, you're going to have to, that's going to be a problem. So some of the basic things of carrying out the plan early, I think, is something we need to spend money on. And schools that are still in the tsunami zone, or I'm not sure you can withstand an 8 earthquake, but maybe you can. And if you're going to do that, then the kids over on the coast, I think, should be a priority. I mean, over all the other buildings that are probably over there. But again, that's just me. It's funny, I'm not opposed to spending money on the Capitol, but I am when we haven't done some basic preparation, I think, for the earthquake that's coming. And we all know it's coming, and the probability of it being pretty bad is up there a ways. So, and another fact within the Capitol bothers me is it can fall down to rubble and we can rebuild it cheaper than we can try to maintain it, plus some of the geological reports. But the president has been very strongly of the opinion that engineers have got it so that they can pretty much guarantee what's going to happen. But the early reports are that what this is built on is pretty sandy, watery sort of soils, and that liquefies during a major quake, and that's going to pose even more problems for the engineers when they go in and try to fix it. So for those reasons, a lot of that list, I think some of it's pie in the sky, and I think we'll have some very vivid or very intense conversation as to what we want to do.
Appreciate that, Senator. Representative Smith, do you have any comments you want to make from either of our colleagues, kind of introductory comments?
No, but thank you for giving me that opportunity. I'm just going to keep listening in.
Okay, thank you. So the desire was to start this discussion. If you take Senator Devlin's list of questions that were asked, one way we might go about this is maybe just prioritizing those questions and setting some of them for, and I'm with you, Senator, and I'm also with Representative Smith. I can't add any, and it's a very exhaustive list. I don't have any additional questions that come to mind other than when does Senator Devlin sleep? That's one question I have. But perhaps we could prioritize some of those questions and take a stab at addressing them in the subsequent meetings that we have. Again, some of the questions that were brought up are included with our agenda items today, and we have time today to talk in broad terms, but also to narrow down if there's a desire to narrow down any specific topic area.
There's one other one that I would, excuse me.
Please.
Yeah. Most of the money really ends up in the major cities. I think it's justified because most of the facilities and stuff are there. I would like to see some type of regionalization of maybe lottery money more so than the actual capital that we're allocated from the general fund. So, but I would like to see some regionalization of some of the money. Maybe just look at it somehow. You know, we do that with highways to a large degree. So I would like to make sure that question at least gets posed. How can we more equitably distribute the money? And see, Mr. Chair, you could argue then that Southern deserves a lot more money.
That's absolutely true. But I think the community colleges do a good job of that as well, making that case of saying, you know, that's one way to get statewide reach is through the community colleges.
Yeah, make sure that they go through the, yeah, I agree with that.
Mr. Chairman, I think the basic questions literally are, if you want to look at it in a very simplistic manner, it's, you know, what obligations and liabilities has the state already assumed? What capital assets does the state have? Not all of those assets are equal in terms of how critical they are to the mission, but some of them probably are equal, are very high priorities. Traditionally, the state has had obligations for state facilities that are not education facilities, but also traditionally the state has been the primary party obligated for the university system facilities. And in at least recent decades, we've also assumed some roles for infrastructure at the local level. They're relatively modest, but those have to do with some of the revolving funds that we have and some of them that they're going to ask to be replenished actually in the coming biennium. I think the other thing that is basic is just how much assets we actually have in terms of our capacity and how that compares to our existing obligations. And then probably more how we go about, if we're going to assume new obligations, how we go about making that decision. And I think it's sort of like we opened the door on courthouses this far. We actually did some advanced thought about how we might open the door, but we didn't probably have the time to do the kind of work that was necessary to say if we opened the door, how far we would open it and under what conditions. The same is going to be true under schools. Obviously, if we go very narrowly to health and safety, and even if you went even more narrowly to seismic, the total I have heard are in the $1 billion plus on the seismic side, probably far more than that. But you could actually retrofit quite a few schools with some of the mechanisms that we now have or some of the capabilities if you had an appropriation of, say, $100 million over each of two bienniums. But the question is, if you open that door, how are you going to so define opening that door that you don't open the door completely? Because if you open the door completely, the overall infrastructure needs there for probably K-12, I don't think anybody has a number, but I would guess it's somewhere between $10 and $20 billion, at least. So I think actually, to be honest, this committee, just even as meeting, discussing this, nobody ever expected, even when we put this bill together back in the, nobody ever expected it would impact the 15-17 capital budget. They were expecting it would impact the 17-19 if we could get to some understanding with the executive branch. But I think the 15-17s, particularly the 15 long session, is going to be a very good laboratory for trying to determine what sort of standards we put in place. Because clearly, unless we can get our hands around where we're going, we're almost flying blind. Mm-hmm. I mean, we asked for a list of all state facilities and got a list that was 34 pages long, single-spaced.
Right.
Did not include all state facilities, could have been another 30 pages if it included higher education. Obviously, not all those facilities are of equal importance. I know all the ones at Southern Oregon are very high on the list, but it just seems to me that we have a lot of discussion, and I think Erin could kind of structure that discussion if she sat down with the co-chairs and a few of the members, and we could actually start to get something out of this meetings, and if we could get some indulgence out of the presiding officers, I think at least we could do some work that might be beneficial as we get into the 15-17 budget. And Mr. Rocco is just back from vacation and he's very enthusiastic.
So the just the effort to document the state billings that we do have, do you feel like if we made the effort to add the university billings, that part of this task would be complete?
I think it would be in a sense, but I think that the, you know, not all of the, I mean, the list that you have includes every restroom that ODOT has. Mm-hmm. In every, now, those are important facilities, and obviously they need to be maintained. But I don't think that really ranks with the Labor and Industries building that's down here, that's one of the older buildings on the Capitol Mall. You know, some people have issues with the amount of prison construction that we've done over the last 10 or 15 years. But we've spent roughly, Ms. Rocco, $1.7 billion, I think, in that neighborhood over the last 10 to 15 years, 20 years, probably.
I think easy.
Yeah. And those are assets out there that, and I don't think this is necessarily true, but if you look at how well McLaren on the OYA side has been maintained, or even Hillcrest, which I'm not as familiar with as I am McLaren, we have a lot of assets out there that we don't know how they're being maintained, or whether they actually ever make it through the priority list to get all the way to the legislature to be funded. And some of those facilities cost us upwards of $250 million to build. And you'd like them to last a fairly long time, at least as long as you needed them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think there are a lot of issues.
There are, without a doubt.
Can I ask a question?
Senator, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I got is, I know the governor has some angst about how we do things, as far as this budget goes. But we have delegated a tremendous amount of authority over the last few years to the governor, especially in education and health care. I just really want to protect the legislative process, because it's a coming together of all kinds of different opinions, very diverse throughout the entire state. And I think it's important that we don't delegate anymore to the executive branch. That's just me speaking.
That's a valid point, Senator. While both of you are bringing up the issues, I've been thinking too about how the nature of requests and the nature of legislative decisions ebbs and flows depending on what's happening to our state at the time. I mean, a natural disaster will, of course, make us all feel like we were behind the eight ball. We didn't get things done fast enough. But at the same time, we also have these goals in education of 40-40-20, so how are we going to build out capacity? We've done the push on for our school districts to have full-day kindergarten in each district. That's a capacity issue as well. When we make an obligation on state police, we are making an obligation that we give them the resources they need to do their job. The same thing across the board of the state agencies. So there is a certain ebb and flow. I'm not sure we'll ever get to a point of saying this is how the projects will be prioritized, from now on until the future, because that process is going to change according to what's happening in the state. So there's some key questions that Senator Devlin's brought up about obviously deferred maintenance, responsibility for facilities, and I think those are areas that if we could, as we might see things differently, Senator Rod, whereas I actually would love to see some sort of proactive process on deferred maintenance, not just leave it up to universities or other entities, because it hasn't been working. We've not been able to resolve that as well.
But to defend what I said, I think if we drew the line in the sand, saying, look, all the new capacity that you're asking for in these different buildings, that's something we'll look at. But we're not going to look at deferred maintenance. That needs to be done. And the thing about deferred maintenance is that if you take care of it early, it usually doesn't cost as much. But if you put it off until it gets really bad, then it costs a bundle, and then they jump and say, look, the state needs to do it. If we drew the line in the sand saying, this is the way we are, at least for now, going to approach it. Now, there are emergencies that come up, the tunnel that collapsed or something like that, where it was unforeseen, and there really wasn't a whole lot they could have probably done about it. That's a totally different ball game. But I'm talking, a new sprinkler system or something within plumbing is iron pipe and it's rusting or that sort of thing. I do believe that the university should take care of that. Now, on making sure that they have adequate capacity, adequate classrooms, you know, the latest in technology, those sort of things, I'm all over, and I'm all for it. But deferred maintenance just bothers me because it seems to me like some of the schools are just putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. It could have been $10 million, and next thing we know, we get a bill for $50 million, and they want the state to bail them out. So that bothers me to a certain extent.
Well, I think one of the things about deferred maintenance and why it has such a difficult time in the legislature is, one, it's kind of a nebulous term because it means to people everything from painting a wall to replacing a roof or replacing a HVAC system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the universities were going to actually fund that directly, they would have to probably charge additional fees to students, which would actually have a significant impact on the cost of attendance. The only way to circumvent that or to go around that would be for the state to provide more resources for the education side so that the state was providing more for the actual instructional side, and they still imposed fees to pay for that maintenance because they don't really have a secret source. I mean, there's no one, it's going to be very hard to get donors for deferred maintenance, so the funding would have to come from somewhere. If you just said the state was no longer going to do deferred maintenance, then they'll have to come up with some revenue source to actually pay for that. Now, this biennium we're in, I think, was one of the lowest bienniums I've seen. It's not the lowest, but it's lower. We funded a whole lot of new projects, but in terms of the deferred maintenance number, I think it was only $30 million, which is on one of the lower side. I think the university system is requesting $90 million in this budget and the coming budget. I think one of the other issues that's out there is that I really don't think we have as much resources as people think we do.
Thanks.
And while that number, I think my number is pretty close, the treasurer in his last report lowered the number substantially because of an anticipated rise in interest rates in terms of what the capacity was. But I think it's about $3.5 billion over the next 10 years GO bond and maybe $1 billion on lottery. And all that can change depending upon how much revenue comes in, what the interest rates are that have to be paid. But still, while it sounds like a large number, once you start looking at some of these projects, it actually evaporates relatively quickly once you start listing projects that need to be done. So,
Mr. Chair, one other thing I would like to look at, or at least pose the question of, I don't think the general public is aware of this, but you know, we have a mandatory cap of 5% interest payment. I would like to see that locked into statute. It just gives a lot more protection, and if somebody wants, I just think that that's very important to keep the cost of government down, and that should be locked into statute. It's 25% for lottery, 5% of the budget of the general fund budget. I think that's something that we might want to look at as far as the committee goes.
That is understandable. Just to push back a little bit, you know, I'm thinking back in 09, 11 when...
But when we initially took it out,
right,
we were under when the rates... we can make exceptions,
right,
to take care of it so that if there's a trend that goes like this, it pushes us over temporarily.
Yep.
That's okay, you know, and I appreciate your concern.
But as a marker, you feel it should be in there as a marker in statute?
Yeah, I think so, you know, and if they feel strong enough, then they can override the statute to do it. But at least it gives it a little bit more teeth than just kind of an agreement that has stood for, I don't know, how many years has that stood for? I think in 93 it was there, so it's been there for a long time.
Mr. Rocco, each budget cycle we go through and we approve new projects. And they actually go into sort of a six-year authorization, right? That's pretty...
The capital construction limitation is a six-year limitation. The bonds that authorize them it's just that authorization exists for 2 years.
Oh, okay. So the
So if you don't use that authorization within the first 2 years, then your project goes back on the list or doesn't go on the list. Normally it goes back on the list and you have to get the bonds reauthorized.
You've been approached, and I don't want to get you actually in any trouble.
Since when?
2 o'clock this afternoon.
We'll just use an example, and I'm not going to use it in a critical fashion. The state capitol is going to take several years to actually complete. It can actually... We always get into this thing about not binding a future legislature, but there are ways to bind and ways not to bind future legislatures. Obviously, that could be split up into two bienniums, and I think that's been part of the discussion. There has to be a way that it could be split up in two bienniums without counting entirely towards the capital capacity in the first biennium. Isn't there?
Yes, because what we've normally tried to do is link we've tried to keep the flow of bonding at only what you need for the next 2 year period. So we don't want to bond and then have money sitting being unused while you're trying to catch up on the construction cycle. So most projects of a longer term nature, the bonding is expected to go over a 2 to 4, 6 year period, and it's staged out in chunks,
yeah,
along with whatever limitation is needed. Now, the 6 year limitation is just if you know a project's going to cost $100 million and you're sure of that, you can give the $100 million of limitation so that the entity knows that they have 6 years to finish the work on it. And a lot of times it's extended. You can extend that 6 year limitation. But that doesn't mean that the bonds will all be issued in the first 2 year period.
A different area that I've actually put down in the questions, but I didn't put it down overtly, is about 8-10 years ago, I think it was, we started funding capital improvements again for community colleges. We would have been completely out of debt for community colleges about 6 years, 5 or 6 years ago. We had no debt left. We were going to do $40 million a biennium, and we did 40 and 40, and then we went a little bit over that, I think, in the third biennium in terms of authorization. Then we had a little gap because of the economy. Then we did $112 million. Well, one of the things we did was these are like G bonds. So there's a local match required. So I don't know how we've impacted things out there in the real world. Some of those community colleges probably never had a bond before approved in the last 10 or 20 years. But are we getting community colleges that are smaller? Because those projects have been minor to like the big four community colleges, big three or big five community colleges. But are we getting people now that are saying, I'm not going to go out to the voters on a project until I can get another one in the state program so that it's 50% funded? So have we changed, in a sense, how people are approaching this? Because some of those community colleges, like I say, didn't have a project that had been actually probably approved by the voters in 10 or 20 years. But in a way, I think we may have changed the outside world without realizing what we have done, so that.
Well, another way you've changed the outside world is by allowing other sources of revenue to come up with that match for a GEO bond,
bond,
such as lottery bonds. So if you authorize, if a community college cannot come up with the match on their own for a G bond, and then you authorize lottery bonds for that same community college's 2 years down the road to provide the match, then you've fundamentally changed, I think, the approach to asking for bonds.
Senator Girod, I have already had a discussion with one of our colleagues who doesn't believe his community college can come up with a local match and would like it converted to a Q bond, which won't work because I think a Q bond has to be a state asset.
Correct.
So he's probably not very far behind asking for lottery dollars because he doesn't think his community college can come up with a local match.
That was the whole idea, was to make him go ahead and get the match.
I know.
So, you know, if the community doesn't want it back,
I send him to you?
Yeah, I'm hard nosed. I'll send him right back to Richard and say he's the one who makes the decision.
I don't really make it.
Sirocco, did, since you are a member of this task force, just from LFO's point of view, are there changes to the process of the capital construction budget that you would like to see, or that Darren would like to see, or?
Well, I think there's some things that we could talk more about. I think one of the issues that comes to mind is that this is a capital construction budget process task force, and not all debt is capital construction. And so I think, you know, when you're talking about something like the treasurer's concept, that takes away your debt capacity,
but it's not
a really capital construction issue.
Yeah.
And it gets approved. There's two different tracks. There's the bonding authorization bill and track, and then there's the capital construction bill and track. And I think this group, I think, has to keep that in mind, that there are two separate processes. They're interrelated, of course, because a lot of the capital construction requires bonding authority, but some doesn't. Some capital construction projects have their own funding and they don't rely on bonds.
Well, and we've been in quite a number of discussions. I think all three of the legislators here have been in those, where we have a small project that somebody wants to actually bond for, and it's $900,000, and we basically go, why? I mean,
it's more cost effective just to pay cash for those kinds of projects. I think the one thing that is difficult for us, for the Legislative Fiscal Office, and probably the Chief Financial Office in developing the governor's budget, but in ours developing your budget, is just what is the process that you want to use to have projects come up for approval, for notice, for recognition? I mean, the last couple sessions, we've tended to have open public hearings where anybody who wanted a project could come and talk about it. And that's the public informational gathering kind of process. But then there's a separate process where decisions are being made on what projects make the cut and which don't. And you all three have been engaged in that process, and Representative Smith also on the phone, have all been engaged in that. You know it's good sides and bad sides. I mean, there are some negative sides to the way it's done right now. Whether you want to change that or not, I think something that some people are thinking this task force is looking at trying to do is do you want to have a more open, transparent decision-making process, or I mean, how do you prioritize these different projects and needs, and which one rises to the top and which one doesn't? And as you said, Representative Buckley, at certain times there are different needs in the state, and so that sometimes it's an education need, so we would focus on education. Other times it's infrastructure kind of work. So I think that's something that would help us know what kind of process you think would best serve the state as getting capital projects approved and moving ahead. we're also interested in monitoring those projects. I think our concern is a lot of times there's a big splash about here's the project and go, here's your money, go do it. And then there's not a lot of check back from the legislature side anyways about is that project on time? Is it doing the right things? Any issues coming up? And we don't have the staff to do that. And so that may be something that we would like to look into, having somebody on staff to monitor both the progress of capital construction projects and the current capacity of the on the debt financing side too. So, and I think there's another issue about the deferred maintenance. I know some states actually build that into their project budgets when they're asking for money for a new capital construction project. They actually have to build in a certain kind of sinking fund where they put money in automatically as the project is being developed. They put money aside ongoing basis so that when those deferred maintenance needs come up, they have the money to do it and they don't have to come back and ask for additional resources. So that's another thing I think that could be looked at as an opportunity. I think that was one of the things on Aaron's list of things to talk about.
Mr. Chair?
Senator.
Since we have Mr. Rocco here, I'd like to ask you about the ballot measure for the treasurer's ballot measure. What obligation is there, if that is approved, to the state? Because I'm kind of, to me, it's pretty obtuse, and it's sort of like full funding for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, but I'm not 100% sure if my interpretations are correct.
Senator, I would say there's zero obligation for you to authorize bonds. There have been other, I mean, we have MNP bonds, Q bonds. I think Senator Courtney is very fond of saying he wants Z bonds at some point, and we're getting pretty close. Just because you have a bond authorization in the Constitution doesn't mean you have to actually authorize any money for it. And for some years, we had M&Ns, so those are the two seismic bonds, and we didn't do anything with those. They were just out there. And I think the P bonds are another one where we haven't issued any, although they're authorized for schools.
And some of the historical ones are either very low or we've hardly ever used them. The rural electrification that dates back from, I don't know, what, the turn of the century, practically?
Well, there's been a few issuance. I mean, there's been, like I said, we're up to Q now, so.
Yeah.
So there is no requirement. That's a legislative decision of how you have a bonding capacity, how you split it up is up to the legislature. There's no requirement that you have to do certain.
Well, one of the discussions I've had relative to the issues about life and safety in schools and seismic is we actually have a task force that's been meeting out there for about a year on this, and they've asked me to come and talk to them a couple of times, and I've tried to kind of narrow their focus. I don't know how successful I have been, but to say that they probably, even if they can get some of the state's GO bonding capacity, it's probably this much. But one of the things they're looking at is if they get this much, which I don't think is a bad idea to do this, is how they use that to leverage more dollars than the state's actually investing. So that for some school districts, let's say, which have a very low assessed value, which might be in many cases rural districts, maybe it's a 2-to-1 match or a 3-to-1 match where the state puts in $2 or $3 for every dollar locally. This would be on a seismic project. But on the reverse, if it's a district with a very good assessed value, maybe it's the state puts in only one for every $3 that is spent or one for every $4. So you actually get some greater return by that than, and you don't actually entirely relieve the local entity of funding what has normally been considered a local obligation.
But there's risk to those dollars, because my understanding is he wants a chunk of change so that he can invest the money from the earnings.
Oh, no, that's the treasurer. That's the treasurer.
Yeah.
This is for, like, actual capital improvements.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The treasurer, the treasurer is has different estimates, but I think now they understand that the bonds that would be issued, even though they're not for capital, would have to be taxable. So the rates would be higher on the bonds. And your earnings all depend upon your ability to earn more than what you're paying in debt service, as you well know.
Well, and it's great if when the market's doing well and everything else, but if you hit the collapse, you lose a big chunk of money, like 30 to 40%. That's what we lost the last time. So
I'm just saying, if we're both in our same position, in the same...
It looks nice on the balance,
These are the people I know of so far that are going to be knocking on the door. There are other people out there, I'm sure. And we haven't even gotten to individual members' requests. I mean, we funded libraries, we funded sidewalks.
Health community center.
Health community center. We didn't have a new veterans home this time.
Not careful. Don't hit the ditches either.
Actually, I think you have one in the works still.
Oh, another veterans home?
In Roseburg.
Yeah, the Roseburg
one in works, but that one's been around for a while. At least under discussion.
That got bumped up, got bumped down. Geez, it's funny how things happen in this building.
So, should we... Mr. Chairman, Please. Should we go on to like one of the, where are we at in the, I'm looking at Mr. Notton, where are we at in our master list of assets? And Mr. Rocco, if you.
Well, I think we got the first cut at that, and it was just a sort of a data dump. And I think, as in most systems of that nature, if you want to have that more robust and have the ability to sort it by importance of buildings and have someone make that determination, that I think you're going to need to put some resources into that. Now the university system, we did get a list from them, but again, it's sort of just because they were trying to work with us. They're not part of the state anymore, so that system is sort of independent.
Still state assets.
In some cases, those are state assets, and in some cases, they're not. But, I mean, that's a separate list, and I don't know if you want to mix that in with the...
Or I would probably just like to have it, actually,
right,
because it's a state
we did,
asset.
We did get a list from them. I have a copy here that's same kind of a deal with several pages of a lot of numbers on it. And, again, it's, you know, all university buildings from small... you know, buildings to huge office buildings. So.
How?
And I don't know if DAS has looked into any more on their list, but they did. They were able to give us that rather comprehensive list relatively easily. But again, I don't know. There are questions about how often it's updated, how valid some of the numbers are because of the age of the data, and again, I mean. Qualifying the data, you know, just not just the quantification of the numbers, but the quality of the building and other things like that. So, do you know anything more, George, about?
Yeah, so first I apologize for being late. This meeting wasn't actually on my calendar, and I saw it and went, oh, crap, and hit it over. So to answer the question, Ken's right. We have information out there, but like many of the data systems across state government, there's like multiples of them. So there's like three or four different databases depending on what you're actually looking at. And this last biennium, for this biennium, the DAS budget was increased, the CFO's budget, to actually do a project to pull that information together and starting toward a long-range vision for what we do with our capital facilities. Not necessarily the higher education side. We're starting with the DAS-owned buildings, which is most of the major office space around the Capitol Mall and some of the others. I think we've got Youth Authority in that group, OLCC as well. We're actually under contract right now to get an assessment on those DAS-owned buildings, not just the square footage, but what's the state of those buildings. How bad are the roofs? How bad are the elevators? All that kind of stuff. And we were actually hoping that we'd actually make more progress on the headway toward a long-range vision this biennium. What we're finding is we're spending having this biennium, just getting the data sources cleaned up and getting this these assessments done at the billing so we have a good baseline to move forward with. So we're in the process of doing it. I would be very cautionary. Ken's given you the list. Some of that, as Ken alluded to, is old data and has not been kept up to date. Replacement values we know are off, and part of it's just that no one's really been looking at this information closely. So we're working on it. Hopefully by the time the legislative session comes in this next year, we'll have a much better feel for what is our physical assets, where are they, what's the condition of them, and then we can start talking about the future. But it's going to take a couple biennia, I'd guess, to get there.
And I think, like most shared kinds of input systems, that you have a variety of responders to that. And so what I think is the right replacement value for my building, George may have a different way of calculating his. So I don't think there's a lot of standardization of how agencies supply information for that, which is something you'd want to look into.
Which is actually, we've brought on board a state architect that we took from the university system. She's been working on exactly those things. What actually is deferred maintenance? What actually is replacement values? Those kind of metrics that we can then have a uniform base to work off of. But it is taking time to get the information pulled together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seismic problems and seismic upgrades, we know it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, the shake's going to be a lot different in Astoria or Newport than it is in Portland and maybe even here, depending on soil types. Have we started looking at, it's going to be in the way high in the billions, but mm-hmm. it'd be nice to sort of have at least some idea of what it would cost on each building or something to do the seismic upgrade.
Yeah, and the state architect is Alice Favelle. She's actually on my staff, and part of the assessment they're working on is they're working with Dogami to try and get a better feel for the assessment for the seismic issues in these various areas to get some of that information. Now, I don't think we'll have replacement values for bring everything. Again, it's going to take several years to get that all pulled together, but we're trying to figure out what is the high-risk areas so that we can target some of that future
analysis. I know, just for a record, that business and transportation, when we had them come down, and I was very surprised that the codes for some of the skyscrapers up in Portland prior to 1990 do not aren't going to be able to deal with the shake that's being calculated. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that they have it down to how much movement they think they're going to get in a 8 earthquake or whatever. So it is pretty scary what's coming down the road, and if we can prevent some in certain areas for reasonable dollars, then that's probably a fairly good investment.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Ms. Mountain, have you seen some examples of, one, as DAS is looking at these lists or going through this process of finding some ways that they would identify facilities that are more critical than others that might be just simply facilities that the state, some facilities might be just facilities that the state disposes of in the mm-hmm. future. But do you also see that, I can think of some entities that kind of, some of the agencies must have a better idea than other agencies about what the condition of their facilities are. I would hope that the Department of Corrections would have a better idea mm-hmm. of what the capacity of their or the condition. I would hope that the Department of Transportation would, because mm-hmm. I mean, in a sense, they'll make a lot of the decisions about those facilities, and even if it's an office building, the dollars are going to be coming from transportation dollars for that. But there must be some way to take this list of 34 pages mm-hmm. and get it down to a manageable list of assets that are clearly of major importance to the state. Or you may even make some decisions where you decide a facility will serve your needs for the next 10 or 2 years or so, but ultimately it's going to have to be replaced, even if it is a major asset.
And I actually think that's leading to what I think are the right conversation. It comes down to a couple. There's buildings that, because of the age of the building, it's better to not keep reinvesting in it, tear it down, and build something new. But there's another factor in here. Over the next 10 years, there's going to be another 500,000 people moving into this state, and we got to figure out, I may have to be careful about my numbers when I say that, but over the next 10 years, population growth is going to be happening, and we got to figure out where is it going to happen, what's going to be the demand for increased services from the Department of Human Services, other things. And really, when you get into it even farther, technology is going to change the way that we do business. I've talked many times that our human services case managers, we may have a future where they don't have offices. They don't have cubicles. They're in a car and they're mobile. We've seen that now with state police. Their vehicle is their mobile office moving all over the place now. And I think we have to also start planning for the future that way. It's not just the physical assets we have, but then a more robust conversation. How do we use our physical infrastructure to augment the work we're doing? Because there's another piece of this, which is not just the stuff we own, but also the things that we're leasing out there. We haven't built a lot of new buildings in the Capitol Mall area or other places. We've ended up leasing space in multiple communities. And the problem is, or the challenge is, if you change that dynamic, there's pluses and minuses with every one of those. You build a state building, that means that there's a lease you're not going to have in the private sector somewhere. So there's a lot of competing issues with a lot of these. Our focus over this 2 years is to start getting that baseline information so we can have those dialogues. Right now, I'm not real confident in the data we have, which is why we're trying to get our arms wrapped around that, but then to get into the things that you're describing here.
And there may be even be things that can be done with the existing data. I mean, we basically, just to give you a sense of what was there, we picked some fields and said, give us everything you have with these fields in it to the people that maintain the current database. So, I mean, I think there would be ways if you wanted only, you know, buildings with a value of over $1 million or something. I think that kind of thing could be done relatively easy. I don't know for sure, but I think.
When will you, Mr. Chairman, when will you be prepared to, will the committee have access to the university list? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Did I send it to you? No. I think it came in right before the last meeting. And so, but I can easily send that to Aaron. And then
Could LFO provide members that request it copies of both lists in a format that's ADA compliant? Which means it might have to be like
you can change the computer screen though, Senator, so the font is bigger.
Yeah. But then you can't see the entire.
They can't see it. It's true.
Mr. Chair.
Fred?
Could I ask, if you come up with a definition of deferred maintenance, I would appreciate it if you'd share it with mm-hmm. this community,
yeah.
Because I can give you an example, and it was something that was in my district, moss removal from a roof. Sorry, I don't buy that. But, you know, somebody like the examples that Senator Devlin gave, you know, maybe that would qualify for something. It's such a major expense that within the times that would have to be where the line would be drawn. Because to me, it's going to be a question of where you draw the line.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is. I'll talk with Alice and see what we can pull together.
Mr. Chairman, is there anything more we can achieve here today?
Well, I'm still kind of seeing with kind of such broad nature of what we're looking at. Do you think this discussion has helped to narrow anything down for
anyone? Well, I think it's put a lot of issues on the table, and it might be incumbent for us to meet with Aaron, meet with staff, and meet with the members separately. That there are only two other members, just so we're not a quorum, and see if we can kind of narrow this down. When is our next meeting?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the task force, again, I would hope that we could be able to meet during legislative days, kind of stack the meetings again like we did in May with this meeting following the other task force meeting, the state budget task force.
Did we find if there's a time already? Or?
I believe there is not a time on the existing schedule, but I'm hoping that we could do it at 10:30 to 11. I do believe the one conflict we had in May was the LAC meeting, which I believe is meeting again in September. I believe they are meeting the Tuesday morning. I have not seen an agenda, but I believe it is on the master schedule between 8 and 11 is what comes to mind. So we'd want to work around that, because I know both Senator Girard and Representative Smith serve on the LAC committee as well. And just from what I am kind of gleaning from the discussion today, a couple of definitional issues I think need to be addressed to begin to kind of get our heads wrapped around the direction. And some of those things are what are mission critical, solely state obligations, what are ones the state has assumed but not necessarily required to do, but over time we have taken responsibility for funding, what are the statewide assets that could have local component funding, whether it be school district. And it sounds like there's like a tiered system beginning to develop around how to begin to prioritize consideration of some of these projects based on things like mission critical, based on other resources for the particular project, that while we may never be able to prescribe a particular process, we could at least put some parameters around, you know, what are some of these definitions, including deferred maintenance would be another one I think needs to be defined loosely. Specifically, I wouldn't begin to know, because even looking at this list, not every deferred maintenance is equal, and some may be more critical based on whether or not it's a mission critical or state critical asset, or whether it is one that could be handled at a local asset issue. So I think some of these things are kind of beginning to bubble to the top, but I think some of the, looking at the list of questions from the senator, you know, looking at, you know, capital assets, what are the state, you know, critical, mission critical, what are the ones, the liabilities the state has assumed, if we can get some understanding of what those are, begin to kind of go from there.
Okay. Appreciate the summary. I'd also like to just keep on the list some things that Mr. Rocco brought up in terms of, is there a way to, just in our process, to clarify how projects are brought forward outside of the subcommittee members or outside of kind of just an open process, what are the options there, and whether we need to consider the follow-up idea of having a staff analyst assigned to kind of monitoring. It's similar, you know, with all the IT projects we're doing now. We have two analysts in LFO who are following up consistently on IT. And this is obviously a major area of state investment, and it's not, to my mind, misguided to think we might need to have additional.
Well, and I think one of the things, Mr. Chairman, is that Ms. Naughton's probably not free to talk about this, but entirely, but you're already well into the 15-17 budget process, and I assume your agency requests are already in, and the HEC sort of deliberation should be in shortly on capital projects for the seven universities.
Right.
Maybe that's what we should, Magnificent Seven, since I can no there longer say the university system.
All right. They'll all feel good about that. That's good.
So all of this, and I'm sure the executive branch gets approached just like we do from outside interests.
Yes, we certainly
do. I believe
do.
They should have an avenue for funding also.
So the agency requests are not due for the big ones until September 1 or August 29th. But the preliminary stuff I've seen, yes, from the university system and the community colleges would use all of our bonding capacity for the next biennium if we approved everything on their list.
That tells me that the community college request is really large. You know that. That's what that tells me.
They're all both really large. So.
I haven't heard that. I've heard of one project, but that's me.
Yeah.
And it's a good project, by the way. To my district.
They're all good projects.
Representative Smith, have your eyes glazed over? You have anything to add? Or
you know, I don't have anything to add, but this has been an excellent conversation. Thank you for letting me participate by phone.
Yeah. You bet.
I hear you're in the Bahamas. Is that correct?
I am in the Sun Belt of Baker City this afternoon.
There you go.
It's a beautiful day in Baker.
Well, thank you very much for hanging in there with us. Anything else? Members, nothing?
I was just curious, on the other task force that met this morning, we've been reviewing some of the statutory language just to see if there's any updates. And I know we've listed several statutes here in the packet that was provided at the last meeting. Is that something you would be interested in having George do?
Yes, if George could make recommendations. Actually, yeah. You know, Mr. Jordan hasn't been here for either meeting. He'll delegate to George anyway. Okay.
Well, I think actually, even if we don't get to a point, which I don't think we're going to get to before session, of proposing legislation, cleaning up the capital side, if it needs cleaning up, probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, I think there are some people we could check with on that, on the capital construction statutes that's on George's staff and that in LFO, and we can take a look at that. Maybe by the next meeting have some kind of general sense if there's a big need or not.
Mr. Chairman, I have a request. I think some of them are, I already know, obviously. Can we identify our audience? I know two of them are directly affiliated with counties.
You want introductions?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Audience some members, would you, if you're inclined, could you just state? We're obviously going to start with you first.
Claudia Black, Oklahoma County.
Patrick Singh with the Association of Oregon County.
Alex Sheba, Lindsay Hart.
Lincoln Cannon with the Oregon Forest Industries Council.
There you go. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your time and consideration today. We're adjourned. Duration.